Oh! Oh, hello.
All right, let's do this one last time.
Warning. Melvin and RMD contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended.
As I told you a long time ago.
Go fuck yourself.
I got invitations right here. Enough for everybody.
Are you ready?
I was born ready, motherfucker.
You Spider-Man, given a job to do.
I played the long game, Mr. Castle.
That's my secret, Captain.
On the roof!
So many snacks, so little time. We're in the end game now.
He looks like an asshole.
He's a criminal, that's who he is.
I am.
Well, that's just as fascinating as the first 89 times you told me that.
Bullseye.
What is up, everybody? This time, once again, for Marvel on RMD Moon Knight Edition on Rayman Digital. However you found us, thank you. Remember, rate, review, subscribe. I am your host, the one and only Bobby D, and with me in the studio this week is David.
Hello, everybody.
And Greg.
Hello.
This week, we'll be breaking down Episode 5, Asylum, directed by Mohammed Daib, written by Rebecca Kirsch and Matthew Orton. Now, second to last.
Penultimate episode.
And honestly, I don't care if he ever gets back in the costume. This is going on to season two. And I would be perfectly happy with it.
I was about to say, so is that a good thing or a bad thing for you?
Honestly, and I'm just going to get straight into this. I think we as a network are a bunch of broken toys that come together to make this beautiful thing work.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I believe what they did this week shows you what happens when you're broken in your head.
I love this episode.
No, yeah.
This was,
I 100% agree with you on that front.
This episode. So I know last week I said, you know, this week he's going to get back in the suit. We're going to have the big, there's going to be, the ending's going to be really big. That leads up to the big showdown in this final episode, which I still see the big showdown coming.
Yeah.
But I wasn't expecting this episode to go the way that it did and to be as heavy as it was.
Oh yeah. Because we finally get the reveal of Mark Spector's background
and how,
I love the fact that they essentially took the two major storylines in the Marvel universe and combined them in order to do this one of a kind origin for the MCU Moon Knight. And honestly, I love this
origin. It worked
out
great. Like
I love this origin.
I loved how it showed why Steven was around.
Yeah, and again, you know, we all have our past that have made us who we are today, you know, based on abuses, deaths, just things that have happened in our life.
And shape you.
Yeah.
While I'm watching this, I was just like, I could understand why this other personality comes out, why he blocks everything off, how this man believes that he's been talking to his mother this whole time because
that's what his mind is telling him.
That's what his mind is telling him. But the fact of, you know, okay, getting comfort and talking to a dead relative, a dead parent, is something that I think people that have been through some shit have done at one time or another to cope with things.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Like, hey, help me through this one time. I know you're still here with me. I need you type thing.
I think that's why that scene hit me incredibly hard, where Steven is talking with the psychiatrist Harrow. Yeah. And psychiatrist Harrow pulls out the, oh, wait. Okay, fine. Here, let's call your mom. And Steven's like, no, you don't do that. Don't do that. And like Harrow's like, no, go ahead. Here you go. Talk to your mom. And then at that point,
Steven realizes that
his mom's dead.
Is really dead.
And then, dude, no lie, that exact scene made me tear up, because as many of our listeners know, my mom passed away just recently.
Yeah.
And I've been going through a lot of stuff, and that whole scene, just, I felt for Steven, because that is what grief really looks like. Because like, it's amazing to me that basically a lot of people say, it's okay, go ahead, talk to him. It's okay. But when you think about it, it's also a negative because
it brings up that pain.
And you can't let it go.
And most of our listeners, like we jokingly say, like I jokingly say that, you know, mom adopted me into the family, but
yeah,
in all seriousness, she did. Mm-hmm. You and I have been like brothers since we've been friends. So mom bringing me into the family just made it a little bit more official.
Yeah.
But I remember the day, and I remember waking up to a text from Tony saying that mom had passed. And the thing is that people are like, oh yeah, okay, she was your mom, you know, air quotes, like, okay, whatever. But it hit me not as hard as it hit you guys, but it hit me pretty hard. And I told Casey, my wife, I said, I don't know why this is being like, this is such a strong feeling for me right now. Like I've only known her for so many years, but she's like, no, she's like, the way you've said about her and how she cared about you, you did lose a mom.
Yeah.
And, but also, I mean, I lost my grand, I've lost, you know, I've had to go through losing my grandparents who are extremely, you know, close, and an uncle. And it not only showed grief, but it showed like how people deal with it.
Yes.
And how they deal with the after effect of it.
And the thing I enjoyed about it was it showed, just like what I said, the positives and the negatives.
Yeah.
Because like the fact that Steven wouldn't face up to it, and it took essentially the villain. And on a side note, this series has the best villain. Haro is the best villain they've ever introduced.
I don't know. I don't want to say he's reinvented himself, but I mean, essentially it's what he's done.
Yeah. And like that whole scene, having Haro be the one to shatter Steven's,
beliefs.
His belief was just so poignant, but also very brutal in a lot of ways. I mean,
well, and it's whenever you lose somebody, you're going through some sort of grief or traumatic event. You put up those walls, and I mean, in this case, his wall was Steven.
Yeah, and like probably most of our walls is some kind of sarcasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's actually, yeah, that's why we're all also on this fucking network.
Yeah. Like, you know,
this is where we come to get rid of our pain.
It is. It's one of those things. We use getting behind the microphone sometimes as therapy of what's going on in our lives. And that, you know, again, we've all had our tragedies in our past that we've dealt with. And this man created a different personality to deal with the loss of his little brother and then the eventual loss of his mother. And people like us have always dealt with like, oh, you know, my mom died when I was 14. And that was like when the big your mama jokes were. And I was like, hey, you're going to fuck a dead lady. Go ahead and do it, weirdo.
Although, you know,
like type of shit. And
that's where your sarcasm came from. It's because I'm not saying that in a bad way, but that becomes your defense mechanism.
Yeah, it is.
And because anytime somebody like do your mama joke, you just come back with, well, my mom's dead, so
fun.
Thanks a lot, asshole.
Yeah, but that's the deal with everything. It's just like even to this day, like the defense mechanism is the self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going to make fun of me about something that makes me feel like shit, well, guess what? I'm going to own it and I'm going to turn it. But it is really a defense mechanism. Yeah. And in this episode, we see that defense mechanism is this other character that they, you know, appeared on a fucking movie and all this other stuff. And you're just like, wow, like I can feel what's going on in here.
Yeah.
And like I said at the beginning of the show, if he never gets back in the suit or Moon Knight never exists, I'd be perfectly happy with the story that they told because it is very a human story.
Oh, yeah. No, this whole series it's had the supernatural side. It's had, you know, it's scary moments, but it's always been grounded in a human way almost.
Yeah, there's a human story behind everything.
Because, you know, like you said, Bobby, it's our defense mechanism, you know, whether it's, self-depreciating humor, it's the sarcasm, you know, before the show we jokingly, you know, we're talking and Mike always makes a joke when I get really, Mike always says I'm really passionate. Mike just says I'm really aggressive or violent. All are true. But that's, I mean, that's, I grew up having to do those things.
Oh yeah. The one thing I want to actually ask you to, okay, we understand
have I ever
that
given myself to an Egyptian god. No, not yet, but I'm
not
looking.
Not yet, but oh, I'd be tempted. But like,
if no Norse gods can offer it to me, I'll look elsewhere.
Did you guys pick up on the fact that I don't think Stephen was the one that actually was created to deal with his mom's abuse? It was to deal with his mom's death, yes, but like, well, in a
Stephen,
way, because
Stephen
remember,
was,
because
was
Mark
there,
tells
Stephen was there after his brother's death,
yeah,
before his mom died,
and Mark tells him, "You weren't supposed to be here, so you don't have to deal with that."
So, I don't know if that means that's him bringing up Jake.
That's what I was like thinking, is which, and especially since we had in the prior episode, I wasn't here to cover it. Yeah, the coffin.
Which I thought
and
they were
going to
address
banging.
That, which they didn't. They haven't yet, but.
It is weird to see how this episode concluded, you know, with balance coming from only one personality being
yes.
around.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to deal with that? Because, you know, the scales are balanced. Mark ends up in the field of reeds and Grant is down in the fucking desert.
Which I feel that when you know, if the next episode, I'm assuming he's going to have to get the suit back or at least get, you know, free Khonshu so that he can. Defeat Ahmet, because they already yes. showed that shit is starting to happen, that
yeah
random that just random souls are being fucking sent down that aren't supposed to be coming down yet.
Yes.
And either when he frees Khonshu, he goes bring Steven back, or it's just going to be Mark and Jake,
and
or we'll see Jake come out.
There was a really cool article I read about the possibilities of Jake, and I thought this was a really cool idea. I wanted to pass it on to you guys. The way they introduce Jake is the embodiment of all the rage and suffering that he underwent as a child when he was getting beaten by his mom.
I can see that.
And like, that's why Jake is the super ultra violent one, the one that blacks out, right? And also
the blackout rage.
The blackout rage. And then whatever happens is like super brutal. Like he basically tore those guys apart in a prior episode when he blacked out.
Oh yeah.
And then Mark says, that wasn't me. And Steven knows that wasn't him. So I was actually starting to piece things together. I'm like going, okay, if Mark just told Steven in this episode, you were created so you don't have to deal with that whole thing. That's why he didn't want to show.
You got to live a happy life.
You got to live a happy life.
Mom was alive.
Who did Mark create to deal with actually the abuse? Because Mark didn't want to deal with it.
No.
I mean, that's always going to be one of those things. We'll see how they answer that question. Even if they do answer that question right now, I honestly, we were talking, I think last week that, it, you know, there's not a, you know, a strong possibility that season two would happen. I don't know if I believe those rumors after this week.
Because
it just seems like we have 42 minutes left to get this done. And I don't think we're there yet.
No, I don't think so either. That's why.
Unless this leads into a movie, but again, it's not on the slate. So who the hell knows?
And that's what I was thinking when I was watching this episode was like, they've got one more, like they have a ton of shit to wrap up. And so either they wrap it all up and this next episode is a longer episode, which I don't think it's going to be.
I don't think so.
But I mean, it could, and they grab everything up, but there has to be a season two. Like there's so much more
there's so much depth to this. And honestly, I am going to say this on record. If Oscar Isaacs doesn't get nominated for an Emmy in whatever, you know, miniseries or whatever they consider this, I'll be shocked because this man is fucking spectacular. Me and Greg talked about it last week, David, that he, you know, acting against himself.
Oh yeah.
And then basically doing it almost this whole episode and dealing, you know, having two characters that same man seamlessly being on screen at the same time. And you're believing they're fucking talking to each other.
Yeah.
And you could tell them apart, you know, it doesn't need to be an accent. You can just tell by the way they act. Like if they still like use the same accent and one wasn't British, you would be like, yo, that, you know, that one's Steven, and the okay, then, you know, that's Grant. Like, you could tell the difference between the two.
Yeah.
Well, and even, you know, like you said, that's what we talked about, this, he was acting against himself, but also the compositing for this is,
it was
fucking
seamless.
Amazing.
It was seamless.
And for anybody that's listened to other shows that me and David have been on, or that I've been on with Mike, and we've talked about animation, 3D, visual effects, all that stuff.
Yeah.
We've all done it. I've done stuff for my goddamn fucking bats. Fucking hated that. but that shit is hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can slap it together, and you're like, all right, cool, there it is. And you can tell when it looks like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back and watch old Marvel. Like, you can watch, you know, semi-recent DC, not DC shows.
Marvel shows.
But Marvel shows. And you can see kind of where there's some of that, like, where they're still trying to get it right.
Well, you could see it heavily in the Falcon and Winter Soldier. I mean, remember, Bobby, me and you tore apart that one beginning episode. We were, like, going, you could see the freaking wires.
The fight on the Connex box.
The fight. Yeah, exactly.
You know, that was supposed to be a tractor trailer.
A tractor trailer. And it was like, no, you can tell the compositing is, like, super off. But here.
This compositing has been amazing. Like, with.
I think this is the best.
Toite, the hippo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Toite, I think it's how you say the name. If you're, like, you're wrong, I apologize.
If he's wrong, then you go, don't never listen to any of my shows because I pronounce everything
wrong.
Okay. Bobby's like, I fuck it up all the time.
Yeah.
But it was so good.
Yeah.
And just the animation on her in general.
It's like the moisture around, like, the nose.
Yeah, the movements.
She was like, it looked like she was right there.
Yeah, and it she acted like a hippo still.
Well, and you know how you know it's good? Because it wasn't distracting.
No.
No.
And you lose all the acting, all the story that's going on if something looks like shit. Because I would just sit there and be like, that fucking left eye is wonky as fuck.
Oh, yeah. David can attest to this. I'm the worst during fucking animated films.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I'm there to enjoy it, but I'm also sitting there as an animator like.
Someone took a shortcut.
Yeah, I'm like, the fuck is that? Like, if something's bouncing, I'll be like, yeah, they didn't really work. They didn't really where's the fucking squash and stretch? Like, what the fuck? And, like, my wife would be like, how do you see that? I go, trust me, painstakingly hours in front of a fucking computer doing my own animations, being like, like, sitting there, like, squinting at the screen when I don't need to because I'm already blind as fuck to begin with. But I'm like, this is okay, yeah.
But I think that this series,
it's their best.
I think it's the best. I mean, it even beats Loki. A lot of people at Loki and basically say that, Loki was the most visually stunning because of all the effects they threw in there. But here, you hit it right on the head, Bobby. It doesn't take away from anything.
No. Well, and it did it in Loki, in my opinion. But I also feel they threw a lot of effects together.
Yes.
To where... You could, like, even if they did, like, you know, cut a corner somewhere, you couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell.
But I think a lot of Loki's effects were hidden in the fact that even the background was fake at that point, you know, where they were using, you know, whatever the LCD technology is. I can't even remember right now. I'm drawing a blank. Or, you know, they were green.
It's called a dark green screen. I didn't mean to say
Gween
like that.
I was about to say.
What the hell?
I was waiting for somebody to be like, Gween? Gween Wed?
Oh, no.
But, you know, the stuff that they were using, I think they're using it in Mandalorian, too.
Yes.
So you had that. Here, it looks like, okay, we're on a real set, whether, you know, it's a built hospital or anything, and they're integrating one guy playing two characters and this hippopotamus doesn't fucking exist.
And that was it. And then you had the zombies and
the boat and
they just, and then,
oh,
the
boat was gorgeous. That was awesome.
Like, so fucking well done. And even at the end, when Steven was turning to stone,
that was cool.
And that was fucking awesome. And I was like, fuck no. I'm like, fuck you. Come on. Really? Fuck.
Yeah, that moment too. It's interesting that basically everyone that I've asked about that scene, they basically said is the saddest scene because, and we're also being sad. This goes back to like how good, you know, he's being portrayed, that we're feeling sorry for a character that technically does not exist. Yeah.
But a piece of him died right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what just watched.
And
it's like, oh, my inner child just died.
My inner child just died. Well, it's like, have you guys ever seen Inside Out?
Yes.
It's the scene where the imaginary friend.
I can't get through that film.
You can't?
No.
Oh, dude, it's hard for me.
It hits too close for me.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, we were halfway through. I'm like, I can't fucking do this. And, no. Like, and it's just a lot of the shit in there
is very
resonated
personal.
Too fucking much with me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to fucking deal with this shit right now.
Oh, and, yeah.
Like, it was like today, like, I watched half the episode at lunch. And then after lunch, like, I was just in this fucking shit mood. And I'm like, the fuck? But I'm sitting here and I'm like, and then, like, I'm realizing it now. It was the episode.
It was the episode.
It's everything that was bringing up. I'm like,
well, and honestly, that's why I kicked off the show the way I did. Like, after I got done watching it again, my crazy mind, the way it works, I was just like, about 15 minutes into the episode, I was going, this isn't going the way I thought it was going to go. How am I going to do a show about this? And then as it continued on and I started hitting, you know, my feels, I was just like, yo, we are all a bunch of fucking broken toys on this network.
Exactly.
And you know, I don't know all their stories and they don't necessarily know mine, but I know we're all broken and they're all probably feeling the same exact way.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing part about this episode, not just for this series up to this point. That's why I think, like, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier hit me in the feels because it gave me that patriotic feel. And, you know, like, I'm proud. I want to see Sam succeed from Falcon to Captain America. That felt fantastic watching that transition.
He pitched in his Buckle 5.
Yeah. Or even, you know, like the WandaVision, you kind of get the feels of this character that's lost everything.
Yeah.
Right. But for me, Moon Knight just hits it so psychologically. It's very similar to, like, what I was saying, like with Inside Out. It's like, yeah, it's that type of feel that basically sticks with you. And it just resonates, and it could resonate to a mass audience.
Yeah. Well, like, everybody can get something from it, and you watch it, you know, it brings up different stuff for you than it will for me, or it might bring up.
Exactly.
It might have some similar stuff, but it might be also different. But for me, like, the stuff that it brought up, like, you know, not getting into it on the show, but it's just like, it was like, fuck.
It's, man, a raw, like, nerve.
Yeah.
It's a very raw nerve.
Shit that, like, that was still going for, like, years. Well, until my adulthood, I'm just like, fuck, man. Like, you know, I like TV shows that do that and everything, but I was watching this. I wasn't expecting that from this
you
show.
Like TV shows that do that, but you usually got to be in a fucking mood for it.
Yeah, like,
exactly. Not one of these things be like, I got to go be entertaining on the radio for an hour.
Well, time to be fucking depressing, guys. All right, who wants to put on The Cure and put on fucking eyeliner?
And plus, when you go into this series, you're expecting a superhero show.
Yeah, like, I come into this thing going, all right, cool. I don't know anything about this character. It is Marvel's Batman. Batman's my jam. Let's go. And then I'm like, oh, man.
You're just like, boys, don't cry.
Yeah. He's like, all right, like, I'm going to have to get on the radio now and do my shit.
Be entertaining. Cocksuckers.
Yeah. Like,
and the amazing.
And you're watching it. And again, my biggest thing, again, I've had this situation since I was young, and I've always told everybody my story is no worse than anybody else's story, whether it was a dog, a parent, a parrot, you know, anything that has tragically happened in your life that brings you to that area that you're just like, I don't want to talk about it. I block it off. It's my defense mechanism. This show hits that point.
Yes.
Fucking right on nail. It's like the nail on that fucking head. Like, it hits. Like I said, it could be a parent. It could be something, a girl that fucking broke your heart that you put up this defense mechanism that you don't go out. A dude that fucking fucked you over. Like, anything that has happened in your life, you could draw into this character and see it and go, I understand why this man has split personalities.
And what's good and shitty in this at the same time is that it's not so much the show, like, you'll pick on one thing from watching this. Like, watching this, like, fucking a shit ton of stuff came flooding out. I'm like, fuck.
Well, not only that,
like,
it's like,
I was like, I thought I was done with this. Like, I let this go. Like, and it's not a Frozen reference. Like, I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, it was like, oh, I thought I let it go a long time ago.
But it still sticks with you.
Yeah. Well, and like, just like,
that's the thing about this storytelling that has me really fascinated, because normally you can look at a story like this and say, oh, it's tailored to a niche feeling, right? But like, going on what you were saying a minute ago, Bobby, is like, not only do you have to go through loss, but you could actually even take it to like, say, like in our sports vernacular, like we all know are familiar with sports vernacular, where basically people say, yeah, turn on a switch, yeah, flip a switch, and you're a different person on the field, right? Same thing here is like, essentially, Mark flips a switch to protect himself to get through the battle. And it's like, anyone can actually relate to that idea that as humans, we just can't face our inner demons without help. You need help, even if it's made up help.
but I mean, that's, you know, and I don't want to say like, you know, people from way back when, before technology and shit, like they had ways to deal with their stuff because they had to deal with it. They had to face it every day. But I also think like they still dealt with shit and they didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And even now with all this technology, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, just like there's this, there's that, there's this, like, but it doesn't fucking help. And it's like, David, you and I have been, you know, we've practically been family for fucking forever at this point. And I mean, you've been there through a ton of shit with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing this and like seeing the scene where he's leaving and the dad's saying, please don't go.
Oh,
like,
I can't leave. I was sad.
Because, and this is as much as I'll share, years ago, and David, you know this.
Yes.
Years ago, I survived a suicide attempt.
Yeah.
I was at the lowest point in my life. And when stuff like that happens, people are like, what you want to happen is you want your family, you want your parents to tell you like, no, you have so much to live for. Like, you don't know why you did that, but you know, we love you and this and that.
You want them to grab you.
And it wasn't a call, cry for help. Like, I was just done. I was like, I can't do this shit anymore. Like, I've pulled myself up by the bootstrap so many times and. You know,
you get tired of it. I'm
fucking done with it. Mm-hmm. And I told you, you acted like a brother. You acted like family. I told my friends, they acted like friends. They were my family at that point. I told my dad, this is a man I looked up to for the longest time, up until like, you know, I was in junior high. He goes, well, you're still alive, aren't you? And that was it.
That was it.
There was no follow up, like, you know, you're still alive, but you know, there's no follow-up to that to make it not sound like a complete just a careless fucking dick move.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I told him, I go, that's it. I go, like, I fucking tried to kill myself. I'm like, you know, and he just made this comment. He's like, well, you got life insurance, don't you? I said, no, I don't. I go, Dad, I don't have a job right now. Like, what fucking life insurance do you think I have? And in this episode, like when he's leaving and the dad's like, I can't lose another son. For me, that's like, that's what I wanted.
That's what you wanted.
That's what I wanted.
I think that's what everyone wants. That's the thing. When they're put into a scenario like that, when they're just psychologically beaten down, they need someone to grab them and tell them like what the dad was saying is, hey, I need you back. Yeah. I need you here.
Well, and I think that's what anybody needs. And like, because I've been through some shit, people come to me with a lot of different things. And the tattoo where the lady on my arm, where the lady has her hand over her mouth and it's basically and her hands are bound, that all has to do with like secrets that people have entrusted in me as like an advisor or somebody with some life experience to be able to tell them that it's going to be all right. That's what the tattoo means. People are always like, what is it? I'm like, it's about secrets. And they're like, people, I don't understand. I'm like, I don't really have to explain it to you, but my hands are bound by some of the things that I know about people, and people come to me with a lot of shit and I have to deal with it. That's what I'm here for, because I want to be that person that tells you it's going to be all right, you know, type of thing. That you will get through it. We'll get through this together. You know, you are meant for something. And so that is what people want. You want somebody to give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And again, if we would have come on 5 weeks ago and been like, what do we expect from it? I doubt the fact that three fucks would have been in here having a heart-to-heart conversation, because the three of us are some of the most outlandish fucking hosts on the network.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And yet, you know, we have all been like had our heartstrings tugged by a fucking superhero fucking film on Disney Plus.
Yes.
Yeah.
And think about that.
That is insane.
Yeah. That's insane in itself.
And that's why when people like, when people shit on Disney and everything, I'm like, look, like, you don't like them? Perfect. That's fine. That's your decision. That's your choice. But not everybody's asking you to be like, hey, what do you think of Disney? Honestly, I don't give a shit. You don't like it? You don't like it. There's shit that I don't like. And some stuff I shit on because I think it is really shitty.
But then you can always watch something else.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing with how they told these stories here, it wasn't followed up by like, if you are an abused child and need help, go to 1-800 Mommy Beats Me.
Yeah, it's not rainbow like didn't show up. Right, in the
background. It didn't have that you know, after school special shit. It's like
the preview beforehand. Like, what was I watching? It was whatever the morning show on Apple TV with Aniston and all them. They had like a preview before that. It was just like before the show even started that it's talked about like suicide is a real issue or something like that. And it told you, and it was like, wow, that gave away the whole fucking thing that was going to happen in this episode because you warned me beforehand. Like I'm a goddamn pussy.
Well, that's like, and those things where, and the thing is like most of the time they do that. Any TV show that I've ever seen where they talk about suicide and this and that, and they're like, why didn't, and people are like, well, why didn't you say, tell anybody that you're feeling this way? And it's like, because you feel like a burden.
Yeah.
You know, David knows this all. Like, oh, he knows, like, I've told him this, like, I think even after I recovered and you asked me like, why didn't I call you or why didn't I say anything? And I told you, I felt like a burden.
Yeah.
That's how I felt to everybody.
That is how someone going through that is what they always feel, is they're a burden. When in actuality, they're not. But the thing for other people is just to actually have that empathy.
Yeah.
To empathize. And it's amazing to me that basically nowadays, people need their version of empathizing is just like what you said, Bobby, is like shoving it right into your face. Here you go.
Like, yeah. You're feeling suicidal. Hey, watch these videos.
Watch these videos.
Like this show.
This is how it goes. You're suicidal. What do you have to be? Why are you so sad? Why do you even think about killing yourself?
Yes.
What is so bad that you? Dude, this exact conversation is why it's so bad.
But it's like, and it's trying to explain to people, and I got that same thing. Like, you have so much to live for, and this and that. And it's like, I get that. That like, but mentally, I'm done. Like mentally, I'm done putting on a face for everybody and being like everything's cool. When like inside, I'm like, fuck. Like I can't deal with this shit because I got to not only deal with like your personal shit. And then I got to go out and deal with people being fucking assholes. And then the news being like, oh, fucking World War III is on the line, or like all this other shit. And it's like racism's back. Like,
and it's never the times that are when you're busy doing stuff. It's the quiet times where you're taking a shit. And you're just like,
oh, I'm a piece of shit.
God damn.
I just try not to make that joke.
But you know what I mean? It like, yeah, when have I got into my own headspace the most? When I'm not doing something.
When there's no one around.
Yeah.
And when there's no one around.
And in this episode, like from start to finish, like they hit on everything. They hit like the pace in which this episode moved, trying to get us back on track.
We're on track for my show.
Okay,
this is what we do. We break down shows and make them real life.
But the pacing of this, of this episode, and I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not, I thought was perfect.
There was nothing wrong with this episode at all.
Because even like they were kind of, like, even with rushing through Mark's memories, it didn't feel like, well, wait, what I need to know what happened there, because they wrap each part up really well.
And the thing is, you know why? The thing I enjoyed the way that they zoomed right by is because that matches Mark's psyche. Mark does not want people to know this stuff. He doesn't want to know. So when he's going through the memories, it's like, bang, 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 bang. I need to get past this. Let's get past this.
It's him. It's like I said, it's putting on that face.
You truly feel like you're in his head.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the thing with Oscar Isaac's performance, is the fact is you didn't need to tell me the whole story. The urgency in his voice, in his eyes, in his mannerisms told you that whatever was behind that door was fucked up.
Yes. And that's what was relatable.
And when it was, I don't know about you guys, but I was shocked that they went there, that they basically essentially turned his mom into a monster. Because in my opinion, when you take out violence on your own child,
you like are the a mother, monster.
You become a monster. And like, I was like going, they're not going to do that. No, the mom's going to like just be said that, oh, she's just sick. She's dealing with depression, and they're going to try to tie it in to make her more sympathetic. But when you got to that part
where she's banging on the door
and then you, when she took out the belt, oh my God, that hit like a flashback. And I was like going, no, yeah, they can't be doing this.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, the sounds of the slaps and the hits. And when you're thinking about it, it's to a child that does not know what did he do wrong?
Yeah. But even then, like they take the trope of where, you know, a younger sibling dies and the parent blames the older sibling. And normally there's a, I don't say a happy ending, but there's like a reconciliation at some point. There was none in this. The mom did not want it. The mom was just like, you know, why are you still here? Like, you know,
well, to advance the character as they have, you know, you couldn't have the mom forgiving a 14-year-old for the death of his brother and to create this crazy 37 to 40-year-old, I don't know how old he is in the show, and have it make sense. You had to have the broken stay broken.
Well, yeah, you had to have that. You had to have that catalyst for it. And the catalyst was her banging on the door and then him like, that's not my mom. That's not my mom. That's not my mom. And then Steven. And then when she came in, that must be where Jake came in. But we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
But the way they turn the mom and then the dad's trying to keep it together. And even when it was for Shiva and he was standing outside and the dad saw him and he's like, come inside. And he's like, no, I can't. And you have that you have that pain of he can't face it anymore, because all he has of his mom is the beating,
the violence
is the violence that she brought upon him. And you know, people are like, oh, she lost the kid. Yeah, but that, like, that's the worst thing a parent can do, is when you lose a kid, is to, you know, turn on the other kid and be like, it's your fucking fault.
And that dad was trying.
That scene where he has the birthday.
Yes.
And
the first birthday scene, or the second.
I think it's the second one.
Where the mom sits down and like, why are you jealous of him? And
the dad is trying to be the peacemaker.
Yeah.
And it was rough. It's the type of uncomfortableness.
It's hard to watch.
It's hard to watch, but it's not hard to watch as in it's bad.
It's just hard to watch because
it makes you uncomfortable.
It makes you uncomfortable.
I'm not saying everybody
has that moment,
but you can liken it to something.
Yes.
You can liken it to something going on, whether it's, you know, say like some people, it's like, oh, their parents getting a divorce and they're trying to keep up face, you know, until it's all done. But, or, you know, the parents are just fighting and it's really bad. And, you know, you're in the middle of it, but like, the sixth episode just has to be like, this is the end of season one.
Well, that's why I said this has to be like, I feel like this ends with him getting through his psychological issues, maybe a little bit of a battle, and then,
you know,
season two.
Yeah, you know, Moon Knight will return in season two, you know, or, you know, a new moon will rise. There's your segue.
Yeah. Well, I was going to make bad jokes, but I'll stop.
Were you going to make a Creedence Clearwater Revival joke like you see a bad moon rising? Born on the Bayou?
Yeah, yes, that's where I was going.
Oh, no. Good. Okay. Not Born on the Bayou. Born on the Nile.
a little different.
Born on the Nile.
I think it'd be a little different tempo and instrument selection for that one.
You know what? I fucking tried here, Bobby. Right? Wait,
look, I appreciate your efforts. I do. But like I said, there was parts of me throughout this episode that I was going, Moon Knight doesn't exist. And I thought it was like, I might have been happy if it didn't. Like, if this was about a psych ward the whole time and everybody that was into it.
That's why I thought so at first. I was like going,
but then okay. I was just like, why would Disney put that Mr. Knight with the oblong head in?
Oh my God.
California Adventure.
Exactly. Oh my God, dude, that was funny.
What's worse is a friend of mine bought the Mr. Knight mask and it is smaller than whatever the dude in fucking Disney is wearing.
All right. So little background information here. So we have our little like group chat and I'm part of some Disney groups on the internet and somebody posted a picture with herself with Mr. Knight. Mr. Knight looked like Mask from 1980, whatever that guy's name was. Yes. It was so big and oblong, the mask that they put on the character actor there.
Dude,
it looked horrible.
It's as big as his shoulders.
Well, okay. as Ben Stein said in The Mask, we all wear masks, metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically speaking.
And metaphorically, that thing is fucking huge.
And the thing that cracks me up is I think, honestly, they had to make it huge because they have so many probably like lighting apparatuses for the eyes.
Oh, come on. We've all been around cosplayers enough that we know that they can do better than that. We've seen Spider-Man masks with eyes that move.
Oh, that's true.
I mean,
that's true.
Like, we've all been going to conventions for good parts of two decades at this point, probably, and seen a way better costumes than that.
I've already got a friend making one. It's already way better. I'm like, God damn it. But like, I mean, I'm sure they'll probably fix it because some people are going to be like, yo, that's fucking huge, bro.
Like,
I ain't going to call you Mr. Knight. I'm going to call you Mr. Noggin.
Yeah. That Glenn from Family Guy?
Man, Mr. Knight's really gropey with all the ladies.
Giggity.
You just hear that? I'm Moon Knight. Giggity.
Head goes to the sides.
Giggity.
But the fact is, like I said, with Disney and their promotional machine, I don't think that they would ever go that route of being like, no, it's not real. We just wanted to tell a story about a mental breakdown.
Yeah, I was expecting that, but then they just doubled down and basically said, nope, he's in the afterlife.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, and like, I go back to people knocking on Disney, and we've even talked about, can they go dark?
Not dark, but serious.
But this shows that Disney can do a show that can be like serious and dark in a way that's psychological, but also that is relatable.
Is relatable. And it's still.
But isn't that every Disney cartoon when you go back and look at it as an adult? It's relatable because there is a story behind it.
Yeah. Well, and it always seems like the stories they tell, whether it's based off of a legend, a folklore tale or something, they always rope something into it that's kind of a big thing at the time. So whatever issues are going on,
yeah,
they have a way of tying those in. And even like when we watched, when me and my wife watched Turning Red, or Seeing Red, I can't remember.
I think it's Seeing Red.
I always forget. I know it's a giant red panda and I love it. But she's like, we're watching it and she's just like, ooh, fuck. Ooh, that's hitting hard. That's hitting like all the stuff that's going on. Like when you're a teenage girl and like, and it deals with her, like her mom thinks she's having her first period.
Yes.
Like, and like they're dealing with that in a fucking kids cartoon.
But the way they dress it.
Oh no, the way they dress it is the mom's like, she's on her fucking period. Get the fucking blood stoppers. But watching it and watching it with my wife, she's like, oh damn. She's like, ooh, that hit hard. Like, she's like, I remember that shit happened. And it's just like, I can't, I mean, there's some stuff that I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was kind of fucking weird as a kid, like, or you know, growing up. But like, I can't relate to it. I think it's all fun. I thought the cartoon was fucking awesome just because it's a giant panda and they also turn into like giant fucking, all the women turn into pandas to fight the mom who's like the fucking, you know, mega panda.
Yeah, it's like a kaiju.
Yeah. Paiju.
It's a paiju, yeah.
But only on here, folks, do we come up with really fucking dumb sounding words.
But that's thing about like what Disney's able to do, especially recently with a lot of their franchises, specifically with the cartoon side.
But I think
they're able to mask like serious issues and mask it so that everyone else
can watch it, enjoy it,
and enjoy it. And still all of a sudden subliminally
people can take relate something to it. Out. Yeah. But I also think that's too, that Disney is kind of, I don't want to say they're stepping away from it or they're going for it, but they're becoming more, I don't want to say inclusive. I guess inclusive would be the word, or they're not just like, I always think it's funny when like Christian people like get pissed at what Disney's doing. And it's like, they're indoctrinating our children. They're not, you are. And you can sit there and they're saying they're trying to indoctrinate your children with like the demon, like, you know, battle, you know, all this other shit. But here's the thing. You can just not watch it.
Yeah.
But well, guess what? They don't have that problem because it's the number one stream show in the fucking world.
Right, I know. Now, right? I saw that. I was so happy. Yeah. Bobby, you know,
all people are saying about it is Moon Knight is the biggest show in the world. But data suggests Disney Plus can't rely solely on Marvel. Well, obviously they can.
Yeah. Well,
and remember, Bobby, this is the thing I was really worried about for Moon Knight is will mass audiences gravitate towards it?
And they did.
And they did.
But see, here's the thing with that is that now that they see people enjoy this character and this type of show, they'll do more.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get, you know, another show, another character that's going to go a little bit further.
I think that's Blade.
And that'll be Blade.
I think that'll be
Blade. And the thing is that people will see, it's like, oh, cool. And then they see Blade, ooh, another spooky, dark character or whatever, and they're going to watch it. And I think it's funny when they're like, they can't solely rely on Marvel alone. They're not.
No.
That's the thing is that they're not, because Luca, which is solely released on Disney Plus, I think won a shit ton of awards or got nominated for a shit ton of awards too. And it's like, it was pretty much them, Encanto. And I think Seeing Red even got in on some. Mm-hmm. So you have like three animated features that aren't related to Marvel in any way. They're all Disney. Getting nominations and shit. And people are like, oh, well, they can't rely on Marvel solely to keep it afloat. They're not. Do you not look at what other shit they're putting out or what other shit's getting awards from them? Like,
actually, on that idea, on that, what you just said, they can't rely solely on Marvel. Is it me? Or did you guys realize that Moon Knight is the one series that's not doing a lot of callbacks to the other shows?
I think the only callback was the bus.
Episode
3.
And you could probably say, you know, in this particular episode, the stuff with Black Panther and the afterlife.
But
in all honesty, Moon Knight is proving to be the one series that stands on its own.
But that's my thing is that I think that's why that comment came from somebody was they see that and they're just like, oh, they're just doing Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, but why not? That's one of their properties.
I didn't spend like $1 billion on shit not to use
not
it.
Not to use
well,
it.
Well, that's my thing. It's like, you know, it's when they bought Lucasfilms and it was like, oh, there's too much fucking Star Wars now. You guys asked for this. Like the Star Wars fandom wanted more and they got more. And now they're like, no, that's too much. No. I just wanted a movie where Luke came out as the big badass with a giant dick and like fucked everybody.
And Boba Fett's titties.
Yeah. And Boba Fett's a woman now and they fuck and they have a super Jedi bounty hunter child. God, you give me all these shows that are good, but fuck.
Rule 34.
Yeah, we already know that.
Yeah, we already know that.
I'm just saying.
I think everyone knows that one.
Yeah, now everybody knows that one. It's all filled with garbage now. It's no more quality. Anyways.
Somebody's Googling Rule 34 right now. You
know, they're going to listen to like, what's Rule 34?
What is that?
Oh, my God. Shit.
Why did I just do that? Don't do it from your work computers.
Don't do it from your work.
Don't do work computers. Don't do it. Look, just don't do it. Yeah. Okay.
You can do it on your cell phone.
David, don't give them ideas. Yeah. You want them to keep listening.
Rain Man Digital does not assume responsibility for anything you Google while we stay on the air.
This is your warning, and we've basically now freed ourselves from any legal action.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, like Blue Waffle.
God damn it, David. Jesus fucking Christ.
God.
You couldn't just fucking leave that one out? Like, why do you gotta fucking do
God,
that?
God, I don't ask Mike to edit out anything. Blue Waffle might be the one thing. I was like, you gotta get that removed. That's nasty. I don't want, don't, just don't, don't, don't.
Don't,
but as far as this goes, like you said, there's like not a lot of connection to the other shows, and I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm not a huge connected universe fan. Like, I agree with some of it, but I've always been okay with being able to tell your own stories without having to go back and be like, oh, well, why are they doing that?
Of Winter Soldier and Falcon in episode 3, there was a brief scene 5 minutes in. If you look at it, it's really frame C45A.
There's a piece of paper with his name written on it.
So he's already hinted at, but that's just my research. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it.
There's some super subreddit somewhere that's broken down all this.
Oh, yeah. No, there is. There's got to be.
100%.
And then there's a subreddit for that subreddit that's breaking out everything that subreddit said. And then
it's all routed
back to Mr. Big's limo on his way to see Crucial Taunt in Wayne's World.
And this is what makes, especially between me and you, Bobby, because we've covered some of the past Marvel shows together. One of the jokes we've always done is, oh, look at this Easter egg and this Easter egg and this Easter egg. Moon Knight, there's barely anything.
And that's fine. Like that shows
the strength.
Strength of the show.
It's only the strength of the show, but it's the writing, it's the directing. It's basically stating, hey, look, we can do a show with these characters. And we don't always have to tie it in.
I don't need an Asgardian walking through the background of some fucking hell or heaven scene to be like, oh, look, it's so and so.
Right. You see Black Panther running across the sands, like, not gonna catch me, bitch.
Gotta go.
Like we don't need that.
Exactly.
I mean, if it was there and like that's what he said, I would have laughed. I'm like, all right, that's funny. That's funny. But I'd be like, we didn't need it, but that's funny. But I think we've said everything about this show. Like, I think
it is. But like I said, I think that this was probably the most unexpected, 45 minutes of talking that I've ever done on breaking down a television show.
Because the episode
I think so.
The episode itself wasn't what any of us were expecting.
No. Because it wasn't the like, again, here Marvel formula for those who don't know.
Yes.
Introduce, go through some shit, take some shit away, get your shit back, get ready to fight the bad guy, all with a witty sidekick. Marvel formula.
But
this episode strayed from that.
Yeah.
Oh, this series strayed from that.
The whole series, but this episode especially was like, oh, you're expecting me to get it back this episode? No. There's still some shit he's got to go through.
And we don't even know what the hell's going to go on for six.
Yeah, and I even said when Steven died, I was like, fuck you. Like, really?
Yeah.
Fuck no.
The most emotional death since Glenn. No.
But you're just like, no. Like,
the one character that also that you would expect them to keep around because he's a Disney type of character that they could easily market anything around Steven. But they took the gamble and basically said, no, we're going to remove him from the board now. And it's just Mark.
But the thing is that everybody had to have reacted the same way.
Oh,
like being upset, sad, whatever about him dying, because he was that, I don't say he was that normalcy, but everybody.
He was his own witty sidekick.
Yeah, everybody, like, I'm not saying everybody has multiple personalities or anything, but everybody always, like, you had that you
imaginary
had
friend.
An imaginary friend growing up, but then as you got older, you had that, like, that inner voice that you would turn to.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? Forget it. We're just going to stay inside. We're just going to stay in. And that's what I did, is I stayed in all the time. David can attest to this.
Oh, yeah.
He's brought me food. He brought food him and mom made plenty of times.
Yes, we've always brought food to the bear in the cave.
Yeah. Well, mom's got to feed the enforcer, so, you know, I need my stabbing strength.
She needs to feed the kraken.
Right. That's pretty much what it was. But I was sitting there and I'd be like, oh, you know, I should like text somebody. And then I'd just be like, no, Greg, you just stay inside. It's safer in here. We don't want to deal with that shit outside. And after a while, and after my survival, I was like, no, I need to get out.
Yeah.
And I need to start doing shit. I think that's when I really started doing stuff with Rain Man.
Mm-hmm.
Was around, not Rain Man, I was, you know, Man with No Lives at the time.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, that and it helped. I mean, I'm, you know.
I like how you're like hesitant. It helped.
It did. I mean, there's some bits I wish I didn't do, but, you know, they were done.
It's all record now.
It's all on the record. It's nothing new, but it's just the episode and the series. I mean, but like I said, especially this episode,
it hit those points.
Yeah.
It hit those spots. And the fact is, as great as Oscar Isaac was, you know, with all his acting, Ethan Hawke was just as good as being fucking creepy mustache.
Are you guys with me on the boat that basically Ethan Hawke as Haro is probably the best villain we've gotten?
Oh, no, he is.
In all the Marvel shows.
Well, if you look at the Marvel shows in general, he is the only villain that was introduced right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't know who the villain was in WandaVision. Loki, we didn't know really what was going on. Hawkeye the same way. Captain Winter Soldier, there were no villains. Everybody was right in their own way. So this was the only true villain I think we've seen. I mean,
I think he is the best done villain that they've had.
Most complete.
Yeah.
Most
complete. And like, and I'll go out and let's say probably all over, because there's more depth to him. And I'll probably get crucified for this, but I there's more depth to him than in my opinion, than Thanos.
No, I agree.
Because you got Thanos, he's like, I'm killing half the population in the universe to save it. You'll see that I'm right.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, because if this was DC, we would have had a Thanos film where we would have believed that Thanos was right.
Yeah. But
like based on a movie, not based on people like us going, yeah, there are way too many fuckers here.
But like, it's just, and it's like with Thanos, like then, like, you know, when they find out Gamora's dead and he's like, oh, he's like kind of sad about it. And I'm like, no, you're not, motherfucker. Like
you're the one who threw her.
You threw her ass. Fuck you, bro. But with Haro, I was gonna say it's Ned Flanders Haro in the underworld.
That was the best fucking comment.
He's like,
paid $1 billion for Fox so we can make Ned Flanders
no shit. but it's true though. Like even creepy Ned Flanders Haro, you're just like, fuck.
You know
like,
how
I hate you.
You know how evil he is down below everything.
Go ahead, call her.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's even like him being like a fucking like an evil prick. Cause like, he's like,
she's dead, call her.
It's like those horror films is like fucking scream. They can't fucking hear you. You're going to die. Go ahead. Go do it.
run into the woods, you dumb bitch. Like you're going to die.
And yet the weirdest thing by far is Haro is a very charismatic character. Like you can understand why people in a lot of ways understand Ahmet.
And that's what makes him compelling is that you want to believe in his cause. Because you're like, yeah. But then you're like, but they haven't done anything
yet. They haven't done anything yet.
Because he's asking you to follow him and believe that his cause is righteous.
Is righteous and
but
just.
But he's asking you to also let go of your humanity at the same time. Because he's like, Ahmet judges those in their entire life.
Yes.
What has lived and not been lived. And you're like, but how does Ahmet know that they are going to do that? Like, how does Ahmet know that?
Or how does Ahmet judge like someone who, like a child?
Yeah. Cause it's like, you know, and I'm not saying everybody's thought of this, but like, you know, you sit there and you're just like, I'll even say today, I was driving home and there was an armored car just sitting outside of a building.
I'm gonna rob it.
And I'm sitting there, I'm looking around like, you know, okay, here's the area. How would I do it? What would I use? But then it's just like, but would I do it? Fuck no.
Yeah. But
the action of doing it is easy to plan out. Then it's like, well, fuck, how do I get away?
But in Amit's world, you'd be judged guilty.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing is that you follow Amit, you have to accept the fact that, hey, if I'm
the three
judged,
of us would be dropped in that desert just based on thoughts we've had in this last hour.
This last hour would have just been like, ooh.
Yeah, just one by one, a host would have been fucking off the air. Like, yeah, we're all gone. We're signed off.
If he's down to Bobby, he's like, well, I'm going to be going soon, guys. So
I just want to sign off. Thank you for listening. Remember, rate, review, subscribe to our show.
Get one more fucking plug-in before you die. I'd say be back next week, but it's going to be a whole new set of hosts, guys.
Yeah. I'm dust. I you're right with the whole villain thing, because there is a true villain that they've built, that they've established, that it is just fucking was creepy from day one, from fucking the first 30 seconds of walking in glass slippers.
Yes.
You know,
I just don't even, I even don't want them to kill him off right
now. No, that's why I said, if they go to season, if this is just getting, his power back and,
like the end of the, if the end of the next episode is like him facing off against Haru, who's now merged with Amit. There has to be like a season two to deal with that, or at least like, you know, a special TV movie or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
A very Moon Knight Christmas.
What's that hanging? Is that Miss Toe? No, that's Haro's toe.
Oh, jeez. All right. I think we're done talking for now. We ready to go to our break and get to our final thoughts?
Yeah.
I think we've covered the shit out of this. And honestly, boys, I think we did it justice.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her,
ooh,
and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, we are back. And remember, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/RainManDigital. Go pledge. It helps us out a ton. I'm going to kick off this week. I'm going to give this a 95. I'd give it 100, but I don't think I've given any show 100.
No, you haven't. This is actually one of the highest ones you've
ranked. Yeah, like there were some when me and Angelica did Watchmen. Because they were telling the same type of story that was based in reality. And, you know, I think those are the shows as I get older that kind of resonate with me more. With Watchmen, it was telling like the real story of the blacks in the South with Black Wall Street and things that, to where you learn the history of what is going on. And in here, you're one, like, this is making me want to fucking read a bunch of Egyptian books to figure out like what the fuck, like, you know, this heaven and hell and the reeds and all this desert and all these gods. And you want to read about that stuff because it's all based in something that is like reality that somebody believed at one time. Those are always those stories that resonate with me. And just to, like I said, to kind of tie it back to, what we talked about for the last hour is I feel like if you've been through anything in life, you could find some emotional tie into this show this week. And I think that's why anything that makes me feel uncomfortable in a way that isn't like a cringeworthy, that is like a fuck my heart hurt way, that is a good storytelling television show. So I'm going to give it a 95. Greg?
I'm going to go right up there and give it a 95 as well. Like, from story, pacing, visuals, this episode, this series has each episode continually got better and better and better. And it shows what Disney can do with a practically unknown character.
That's what real writers can do.
No shit. And it was just, it was great. So for me, it's a 95. Like I just can't be like, yeah, you know, there's like, it's this. Nope. It's fucking 95.
Yeah. There is no nitpicking what happened this week.
I mean, I'm sure we could, but
we could, just, but we're not assholes on Rotten Tomatoes or anything else that's trying to sit there and
well,
be like,
scene 37. If you notice the sarcophagi isn't the right color. Cause if it had been aged, that should have been carbon dated to so many years. So it should be kind of dark hubris brown. What?
Honestly, and what he is doing is absolutely true. I saw something that HBO Max, you know, released the Batman, and they're like, well, they should have removed this bus stop because that is the bus stop from London and it's famous for this. And that wouldn't be in Gotham. And you see it in this scene. Yeah. And you're just like, who the fuck cares, asshole?
Exactly, Bobby.
Exactly.
Anyway.
David,
what's up?
I'm actually going to make the leap from you guys. I know on this network I always get flack for giving the big triple digit. But
he's talking about cock size.
But Moon Knight has actually proven to not only be the series that I've been waiting for, but it's also it's not even arguably, it is my favorite Marvel series up to this point. The episode itself is 100 because it's a great capstone for a penultimate episode that just encapsulates all of the narrative and background of Moon Knight that we need to know as an audience. And they handled it so elegantly that I can't find anything wrong with that. I mean, as you guys said, maybe if we nitpick it, we can pick apart at the pacing. But as I said earlier, the pacing, I know people said it's fast.
Yeah, but you know what? This is the reality of what we do as critics on this network. You know, we've all done movie reviews. We've all done TV reviews. The fact is, if they would have had subtle flashbacks for 5 fucking episodes that they put all into this one episode that made it way more impactful, those 5 episodes we would have fucking shit on. Because it's like, I'm tired of fucking flashbacks. What does this flashback mean? What is it doing? It doesn't make sense. No, they did it in a fucking smart way, and there's nothing to fucking shit on.
Exactly. There really isn't. So I'm giving it the 100. It's truly one of the best, if not actually best, Marvel episode to date.
Yep. I can't argue against that at this point. And with that, Otaku Force, Circle of Jerks, wasn't mentioned once until right now.
Oh, hey, guys, if you're looking for something else to listen to as well, you can check out Otaku Force.
Or a wrestling show.
Or our wrestling show that we were approved for last week.
Yep, we got the approval.
That's how good this show was this week, that we didn't do our normal plug shit of our own shows throughout. So we were able to go basically an hour
without plugging our own shit. Also, guys, make sure to check out Bobby and Circle of Jerks.
So that's how good this was. But you can also catch all our other shows. Go to RaymanDigitalMedia.com or wherever you get your podcast. Go find our other shows, because we talk a lot of shit about a lot of things, and we will come back next week and finish this one off.
Yep. Time for the money shot.
Okay, shut up. Shut the fuck up.